Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
97.1 The Ticket, the Jamie and Stoney Show. We are joined by award-winning author Ian O'Connor, a New York Times bestseller who has a book out on Bill Belichick called Belichick, The Making of the Greatest Football Coach of All Time. It is available everywhere books are sold. And Ian joins us now here on 97.1 The Ticket. Ian, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
We are great. Thanks so much for the time. You said in an interview that you wanted to write this book because to you, Belichick is the most intriguing individual really you've ever come across, and there's no close second. And we agree. I mean, I don't think there's much debate about that. If you could, I know you were unable to interview Belichick for this book because he declined all interview requests. If you could have one question for him, other than "What's your deal?" what would that question be?
Well, one that pops to mind involves the Spygate case, because I think that the advantage they gained was minimal, and I thought the risk he took was monumental, particularly when his former assistant Eric Mangini, who was then the head coach of the Jets in that first game in the 2007 season, warned him in advance, "Bill, do not do this in our building." And Bill did it anyway, and the camera was confiscated. And I have new material in the book about the three law enforcement officers, including an FBI agent, who confiscated the camera and ended up refereeing a debate between the Patriots and the Jets over who should have ownership of that camera and that tape. And so I wanted to ask him, why would you take that risk for such a small advantage? Because like Bill said, 80,000 people can see the opposing coach give the signals. So as they filmed those signals, it gave them a little bit of an edge, but not much. And I just thought it changed the way much of America looked at him and his program forevermore, and I just don't think it was worth it.
What do you think galls him more, Spygate or Deflategate?
Probably, that's a good question, probably Deflategate, just because of how long that dragged on. And you know, obviously after the case, or after that story first broke, the Patriots actually played better football with properly inflated balls than they had with the deflated balls against the Colts in that AFC title game. I think that they all do. I think because in Spygate, he believes, and in a lot of ways I do as well, and many people, when I was growing up playing sports, you tried to steal signals. That was part of the game, whether it was baseball or whatever sport you were playing. And I just think Belichick thought it was not a very big deal, and he got hammered for something that should have been a $25 speeding ticket. And Deflategate was really more of a Tom Brady. You know, one thing that's forgotten by much of America is that Belichick was cleared in the Wells report of any wrongdoing, and yet that has obviously stuck with him, that Deflategate case, and has also hurt his reputation.
We're talking to Ian O'Connor, the author of the book Belichick, The Making of the Greatest Football Coach of All Time. Ian, a year ago at this time, there was a report on ESPN.com about the imminent demise of the Patriots and the fact that Belichick and Brady and Bob Kraft had grown tired of each other and they were all going to split up. Well, now here they are back in another Super Bowl. Did you buy that that report, I guess? I'm not trying to ask you to go after a fellow writer, but did you see that as a possibility or probability? And how is the relationship now in your mind from who you've talked to?
Yeah, I very much believe it was real. I think the reporting there by Seth Wickersham and some of the ESPN and some of the Boston area writers like Bob Holler, Greg Bedard, Tom Curran, I think was very accurate. I wrote about it in my book. The relationship did go off the rails. And I think one thing that was lost in translation maybe is the fact that they went, Belichick and Brady, 18 years of working day-to-day in close quarters under immense pressure to be the best ever at what they do on a consistent basis before there was ever a fracture in their relationship. To me, that's amazing. And so it did happen. I wrote in my book, according to sources, that as late as late March in the offseason, Brady was thinking of walking away rather than playing for Belichick one more time. And so it was real, and they survived the fracture in that partnership. It's been the most successful coach-quarterback partnership in the history of the league, but always transactional. never about love and warmth and affection. They've never once been to dinner together. But it works. It's back to where it's functioning now. Basically, the wounds have healed, and they're on the verge of winning ring number six because of it.
It's crazy when you look back. I mean, he, you know, was in Cleveland, and the move from the Browns kind of screwed up his last season. Then the Jet fiasco, and then he gets a New England deal. And I saw a copy of an article that you wrote saying you didn't understand what the hell the Patriots were doing hiring this guy. What were the Patriots thinking when they hired this guy? Because it certainly worked.
Well, it certainly did. And I wrote a column saying it was a bad hire. And people forget the way Belichick was perceived back in 2000 was dramatically different from the way he's perceived now. He had four losing seasons out of five in Cleveland. People up and down the New York Giants organization thought he would never succeed as a head coach. George Young, the GM, being foremost among them, told a room full of Giants scouts and executives that this man, Bill Belichick, will never be the head coach of this franchise. And Art Modell, the former Browns owner, told Robert Kraft, "You're making the biggest mistake of your life if you hire this guy." People in the league office told him not to hire him. And so I would say three quarters of the league believed it was a bad hire. There were people on Bill's staff going to Foxborough who thought they were concerned they were committing career suicide by going with him. And he lost 13 of his first 18 games. And Kraft was worried he was going to have to fire him after two seasons. Bill was worried he was going to get fired. And then Tom Brady walked into his life in the nick of time after Bledsoe got hurt on that first Sunday they played football after 9/11. I was on the field when Bledsoe got hit by Mo Lewis of the Jets, and Brady trotted in. And the rest, as they say, is history.
We're talking to Ian O'Connor, the author of Belichick, The Making of the Greatest Football Coach of All Time. It's available everywhere books are sold, Amazon.com, etc. Ian, we are in talking to you from Detroit, where the head coach is Matt Patricia, entering his second year. Another of the Belichick assistants. We know the record, right? Bill O'Brien is the only one, I believe, with a winning record in Houston. Your thoughts on who you've talked to about Matt Patricia, and also why hasn't it worked for Charlie Weiss or Romeo Crennel or any of the other assistants? Is it simply because they were in bad situations, or is it because Belichick is the guy and everybody else is just trying to preach his message?
I had one executive tell me that when these guys leave and go off to be head coaches elsewhere, the biggest problem is twofold. They don't take Bill with them, and they don't take Tom with them. Those are two big problems.
Yeah.
You're starting with, in a hole there. So Weiss is an interesting case study, because in college football, I think it's a little more difficult to determine what exactly happened at Notre Dame. Charlie is a very he's got that Jersey guy demeanor. He's braggadocious. So he's filled with a lot of swagger and attitude, and it didn't translate to the college game, although he swore it would. I think the two most conspicuous examples, Josh McDaniels in Denver, Eric Mangini in New York and Cleveland. And I think in those cases, they tried to be too much like Bill without Bill's credibility. And I believe when players, and I've heard this from sources that I talked to for the book, if players can tell you're not being true to yourself, you're not being genuine, you're being phony, they're not going to play for you, they're not going to win for you. And in talking to people in the Denver organization, it was hard to find anyone to say a nice word about Josh McDaniels and the way he ran things on a daily basis. So with that imperious attitude and the way they carried themselves, Mangini, I covered him some as a columnist in New York, and he did at times act like Belichick without the results. And so I think they paid the price for it. I do think McDaniels will get a second opportunity. Probably he'll succeed Bill in Foxborough. And I think much like Belichick, who learned from his mistakes in Cleveland, I suspect that McDaniels will learn from his mistakes and be much better the second time around.
Why does he have such a crappy personality at the podium and all that stuff? And then you see him like hobnobbing. He's like the most jovial person in the world when he's talking to Bon Jovi or talks about lacrosse.
He loves lacrosse. I think that's his first love. Kind of like John Wooden, his first love is baseball, not basketball, back in the day. Bill, it's a Jekyll and Hyde thing going on there. I talked to so many of his friends and associates who said away from football and the stadium and his press conferences, he can be very kind and warm and charming even in social settings, as hard as that might be to believe. And he created this one-dimensional character for his news conferences, built around the notion of, hey, we're in the business of collecting information, not sharing it. Therefore, if you ask me a question, I'm going to give you as little information as possible. I'm going to act as disagreeable as possible in the process, and I want my players to follow my lead, and they do. So I think it's strategic. That's not the complete human being. So I have a lot of anecdotes in the book that show you the human side, the other side of Belichick away from football. And I think that was important to me. I wanted to write a defining portrait of the man, not just the football coach.
Well, his coordinators, if you base upon Matt Patricia, they don't tell you anything at the press conference either. One final thing from me. It's about a year later. Are we ever going to find out why the hell Malcolm Butler did not play in that Super Bowl?
Well, first on Patricia, because you asked me before, it should be noted that Belichick went 5-11 in his first year in New England in his second job, never mind his first job. Bill Parcells went 3-12-1 in his first year. So I think it's a little early to panic on Matt Patricia, though I didn't see the need to scold that reporter in that press conference.
No.
Posture when he walks around like an unmade bed.
Yeah.
But on Butler, listen, there are a couple of rumors out there that some people have heard in New England, and I didn't nail down for the book. I really think that was largely anyway strategic, in that over the course of that week, Butler started out the week sick, missed a team flight, so he was behind. He admitted to ESPN he had a lousy week of practice. I think Bill saw that, decided to get bigger in the secondary because he was concerned about those two big, powerful running backs the Eagles had. He knew his defense was terrible. That year, how they got to the Super Bowl with that defense is beyond me. And he gambled that Nick Foles couldn't beat him by throwing the ball all over the lot. And I think where you can criticize Bill severely is at halftime. He's the greatest adjuster of all time. At a Super Bowl, you have so much time to make adjustments at halftime. And he didn't go back to Butler in the second half. That, to me, was really almost unforgivable that he didn't do that. He went to Bademosi, who missed a huge tackle on third down on one of those Eagles scoring drives. So that, to me, is where he deserves to take a hit.
Ian O'Connor, ESPN.com writer. The book is Belichick, The Making of the Greatest Football Coach of All Time, available everywhere books are sold, and certainly timely with the Super Bowl coming up on Sunday. Ian, thanks so much for the time. We really appreciate it, and hopefully we'll talk to you soon.
Guys, thanks so much for the invitation.
We really appreciate it. There he is, Ian O'Connor here. Jamie and Stoney, 97.1 The Ticket.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.